So training costs, agenda paper 5. I'm handing over to Ken.
Agenda paper 5 analyzes comments on the committee's tentative agenda decision about the accounting for training costs to fulfill a contract with the customer. Committee received 17 comment letters by the comment letter deadline and 2 late comment letters. 9 respondents agree with the committee's conclusions for the reasons set out in the tentative agenda decision. 4 of those respondents suggest clarifications to the agenda decision. 4 other respondents disagreed with the committee's technical analysis, and 2 respondents agree with the committee's analysis but question the relevance of the accounting outcome. They suggest considering an amendment to IFRS standards. Paragraph 13 to 38 discuss respondents' comments together with our analysis and recommendation. Based on our analysis, we recommend finalizing the agenda decision with the changes recommended in paragraphs 21, 22, and 37. I will now ask whether you agree with our recommendation to finalize the agenda decision as set out in Appendix A.
Bruce.
I actually agree with the agenda decision as it's come to. I think as per previously, I mean, I think that there's enough of the wording to me. It does take a bit of time when you work your head around the two, but I think in my view, when you got to 38 and it clearly puts it in there, I think it's definitely in there. Interesting, I still think some of the comment I got was more, when people who didn't like it, was more people's frustrations that there are people who think training costs should be capitalized. And I said to them, well, I think that's great input to a 38 project, but I don't think it's going to be resolved in the agenda decision, so I agree with it.
And that came through in quite a few of the comment letters as well, that perspective. Lisa?
I agree with the staff decision. I must admit it took me a while to get there because I was of the view that if you have a cost that is fully reimbursable from a counterparty, you have a contract, they're legally obliged to pay you, that should be something that you could capitalize. But going through the guidance in 38 and also looking at 15, I do think that what's written in the standards, it puts you to the point that you say that these costs cannot be capitalized. However, I think that there is still a little bit of confusion, and this goes to the scoping in IS 38, and where it refers to paragraph 3I on IFRS 15. I just think here, because we make the statement in the staff papers that paragraph, which one, but on the expenses that are included, I think paragraph 5 trumps the scoping paragraph of saying, if you're in IFRS 15, then you're out of scope. So I think it would be good if we could amend, just have a narrow scope amendment to change paragraph 3I just to say, except for those expenditures specifically in the scope of IS 38, that would actually make it very clear, and then there wouldn't be confusion about the circularity of 38 saying that you're in and then you're out because it's an IFRS 15 contract.
But you do agree with the agenda decision?
But I agree with the decision, yeah.
Anybody else? Okay, so on the screens I've got Young Soo and then Jim. Young Soo?
Yeah, I would say I agree with the staff analysis conclusion. I enjoyed reading the appendix paper, especially when I looked at the sentence added at paragraph B of the agenda decision at page 13. By adding that sentence, I think we, the committee, clearly say that IFRS is a principle-based accounting. We are not saying, you know, the training cost is an expense because the wording of the IFRS section, instead what we are saying is that, you know, the training cost is an expense because employees are not controllable and because training costs and employees are not separable. So, I just say I really enjoy agenda decision, so I fully support the staff analysis and conclusion.
Thank you. Jim?
I also agree with the staff analysis and the conclusion. And as we know that a few people always like to capitalize things here and there for different purposes. But this analysis and the conclusion give them a clear guideline. And given this fact patterns, it should be fenced straightforward. So I in full agreement with this.
Thank you. Brian.
So I agree with the agenda decision. I think it's clear that the costs that are expensed under 38, and I also agree with the comment that is in the staff paper, but not in the agenda decision, that they would also be expensed if we decided that they were covered by IFRS 15. So I do agree. I have two specific suggestions in relation to the agenda decision. The first one is quite small. On page 12, in the description of the fact pattern, the new sentence in point B says the training costs are in 38 and the entity has no control. I think the test in that paragraph is whether or not the entity has sufficient control. So I would insert the word sufficient rather than no. And the other one, which would possibly be slightly more substantive, is I know kind of Lisa was saying when she first looked at this, the fact that it was rechargeable seemed like a bit of a slam dunk asset. And I do get that a lot in practice when this issue comes up. It was raised in the EY comment letter. And if I look on the top of page 14, the first comment, EY suggests adding a sentence that the recharge isn't relevant to assessing whether or not there is an asset. The staff say that they think the agenda decision already addresses that. I think because of the frequency with which that point comes up in discussion, I think it would be helpful to have a single sentence in the agenda decision just saying explicitly that the recharge doesn't affect the assessment. But otherwise, I agree with the agenda decision.
Does that go back to your famous journal entry, Brian?
Yep.
Guy, I'll let you in because I know it's frustrating when you're on the screen.
Thanks, Stu. I also agree with the agenda decision, and I was wanting to pick up on something that Brian just mentioned as well. You know, I think there this issue of training costs. You know, some think that the answer that's being driven here is this simple scoping question of being directed to 38 rather than 15. But I agree with the analysis in the paper that even if we set aside that scoping question and analyze this issue under 15, it still does not give rise to an asset. And articulating that in some way in the agenda decision would seem to me at least helpful. The confusion over the application of paragraph 95 to costs such as this is evident from some of the comment letter responses that seem to suggest the answer here is just a simple question rather than something fundamental to the application of paragraph 95. And there's two ways to address that. One is a more detailed explanation of the agenda. Think about the application of the assignments. May add some confusion to the scoping point that is being drawn out. So the other way.
Sorry, Guy, we can't hear you.
Sorry, can you hear me now, Sue?
Yeah. I heard you talk about paragraph 95 and why that might not be best, and then you started to talk about the other way, and we missed all of that.
Yeah. The other way being what Brian just highlighted about the recharge point raised in the EY comment letter, I think would be perhaps a simple way of helping to clarify application of paragraph 95.
Okay, thank you. Bonnie?
I agree with the staff's analysis and conclusion. I consistent with maybe some of the other comments, I think what the staff had written in paragraph 20 of the paper was an item that I was going to suggest be added to the tentative agenda decision, which is basically the staff's acknowledgement that it's the assessment of whether or not it meets the criteria for an asset, not merely the scoping question. So I think using what the staff had written and weaving that in would be very helpful, and I think it will address maybe some of the points that we've had.
Okay, Carsten?
So I also agree with the tentative agenda decision. I just had two remarks. The first one is in the staff's analysis, I was hesitating a little bit whether we, you know, we would necessarily get to the same conclusion if we looked at paragraph 95 of IFRS 15. But I don't think at the end of the day that this is relevant in any way, because we do conclude IS 38 is the applicable standard and it isn't repeated in the agenda decision. So I'm fine with that. I would just prefer to keep it like that and not talk about paragraph 95 in the agenda decision. The other comment I had was I was wondering whether the guidance in paragraph 35 of the staff paper, I found that quite helpful. Paragraph 35 explains that the scope paragraph of IS 38 should be read as a whole. You know, I think a lot of the confusion comes from comparing paragraph 3I of IS 38 and paragraph 95 of IFRS 15. You know, and understand that people think that there might be some secularity if you just look at these two paragraphs. But if you read the entire scope section of IS 38, which includes paragraph 5 of IS 38, then I think the conclusion becomes much clearer. So perhaps it might be worth mentioning that, you know, this, you know, I think that the agenda decision already does refer to paragraph 2 through 7 yeah. of IS 38. But, you know, just explaining that these paragraphs should be read together as a whole, and because that really takes away the point about the secularity, I think.
Okay. Carl.
Thanks. I also agree with staff's analysis and conclusion. I'm supportive of the amendments in this new agenda decision draft. Just a small suggestion in the fact pattern letter B, the new text. It seems quite unusual to me to refer to a paragraph in the fact pattern. I think this could be viewed as unnecessary to state the training costs are as described, and we could go the training costs, the entity has no control or has sufficient control over the training costs could be better instead of start referring paragraphs in the fact pattern. It's a bit odd. I agree in principle. It's just a matter of form.
Come back to that. I think that came from the committee last time. But
and I also support the inclusion of the concern raised by EY, as mentioned by Brian.
Bob.
I also support the staff's conclusion, the analysis, the agenda decision. I was one at the last meeting who was suffering from this circularity, or thinking that there was circularity and why should 38 apply and not 15. I think the staff did a really good job in this paper of explaining how it works and that there really isn't this circularity. And I found paragraph 35 particularly helpful. I thought about and started editing the agenda decision to bring that in, because that doesn't, you can get it, but it doesn't just hit you in the face if reading it. But then as I tried to do that, it was adding things that I'm not sure is necessary. It's more of a basis for a conclusion than really. I think we do tell people exactly how to apply this, and I think that's fine. I think the suggestion to add the statement about that a recharge does not create an asset, EY suggestion, I think that's a good suggestion, because I hear that argument all the time, so I'd be supportive of bringing that in.
Okay, thank you. Bertrand.
First of all, so I agree with the staff analysis conclusions and with the draft agenda decision. Maybe to answer to Bruce that said there was frustration in the comment letters, I'm not sure it's the point. Many came from France, actually. So maybe I can explain a bit on that. I remind you of the fact that I didn't vote initially the draft tentative agenda decision or the tentative agenda decision for the same reason as Bob explained, i.e. the circularity. And I felt that effectively it was not enough explained or articulated in the previous analysis. But thanks to the commentators received, the staff did a great job in effectively explaining in this agenda paper the apparent circularity was not a circularity and the order in which you need to analyze. So effectively, it's pretty clear that for some, there was a tension between 95 of paragraph 95 of IFRS 15 and IS 38, and there is no. And it's very well explained in the in this agenda paper. And then you fall in IS 38. So maybe to echo also Bonnie's comments, I think what helps understand is paragraph 20 of agenda paper, of the agenda paper. What helps to understand the way to understand this non-circularity between 15 and 38, and the way and the reason why you do not control your skilled staff, hence your training costs applying IS 38. But to me, once again, it's another proof that IS 38 needs absolutely to be amended, notably 69 and 69 capital A, just because those are rules that are within a principle-based standard, and you don't understand why it's black and white in the instance of 69 for all those costs, and why there couldn't be any form of exception in one way or another in a principle-based approach. And I think to finalize on that, I think the problem is effectively the application of the standards seem quite clear now, I think. The problem is effectively from the perspective of those who commented, it doesn't fit with the economics of the contract or what they think the economy of the contract is. And I think the problem is there. And the problem comes from IS 38.
An observation, so I don't disagree with the analysis. I think I would agree with Karsten that it would be useful to refer to paragraph 5 as well, of 38. My own observation was that I did have some sympathy with some of the commentators in the sense that 1593 refers to resources, whereas it's only in the BCs it refers to an asset. And I could see why people might think they've got resources that will be used in the contract, but then BC 308 says it's only if it meets the definition of an asset. So I can see that, but I think once you're in 38 for all training costs, then you're stuck in a sense, so that's clear enough.
Goro.
I also agree with the analysis and the conclusion. The problem laid in September has become clearer in this new agenda decisions wording. And this agenda decision will help mitigate the diversity in practice, which would be welcomed by the user's point of view. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so the main things that I've heard, and then Petrina, tell me if I've missed anything, the point raised about paragraph B and the fact pattern, and I think we'd probably be best, as suggested, I think, by Brian, to go back closer to the words in 15 and talk about the fact that the entity has insufficient control over the expected future economic benefits to meet the definition of an intangible asset. I think we should build those specific words in there. I'll take the vote, assuming we keep the specific reference to paragraph 15, although I do note that Carl suggested that he might want that excluded. A few people have followed on from the EY comment and suggested that we make it explicit that having the ability to recover, or whatever the exact words are, doesn't change the analysis. I think that seemed to be helpful for understanding. Did you want to propose any other amendments beyond that?
I didn't, but I just want to explain, because Bonnie, I know that at least you had suggested could we embed something from paragraph 20 in the paper, and at least I want to explain why I think it's more difficult to do, at least from my perspective, and then get people's views. I think it's maybe more subtly already in there, but I think the reason it's maybe more difficult to do, at least as worded in paragraph 20, is it kind of might mean talking about a different fact pattern. So, if we're going to contrast, like, this fact pattern is one where we're saying there isn't you know, you don't meet the definition of an asset, and to do a kind of contrast would mean talking about a different fact pattern. And I'm hoping that maybe we're still getting the message across in paragraph 20, which is, you know, what you're doing here is analysing whether you meet the definition of an intangible asset in 38, kind of comes through under the heading application of IAS 38, because it's very much even then, you know, quoting from paragraph 15 that says this assessment is about whether you meet the definition, and also kind of built in there is an entity usually has insufficient control. So I'm hoping sort of more subtly in a sense, but the point is kind of captured in those words.
So at the same time, Patrona, you could perfectly incorporate these, not specifically as worded in paragraph 20, but in so. Where I'm not clear is what you do with the reference to paragraph 15 of IAS 38, but I liked quite this reference personally. And when you say the training costs are as described in paragraph 15 of IAS 38 intangible assets, i.e. the entity has no control over the expected future economic benefits, blah, 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 you could then say, i.e. the entity as in most circumstances, or in these specific circumstances, maybe not there because you have a specific fact pattern here, so maybe not in most circumstances, but in the circumstances described in the request.
Yeah.
And meaning that there might be specific cases whereby you're not specifically in the circumstances described in the request, hence maybe the conclusion could be, or not, I don't know, different.
I think maybe, by the way, your comment, Bertrand, just identified that maybe the IE in there is incorrect, so we should at least remove the IE and maybe so ensure that we're talking about, you know, this fact pattern, we're saying the entity has insufficient controls. Yeah.
OK, so with the clarification in paragraph B and with the addition of the fact that having the ability to...
Yeah.
Doesn't change the analysis, can I get a show of hands?
Sorry, are we going to make the change that Bertrand
Yeah,
recommended?
We're certainly going to remove the IE and potentially make sure it's clear it's this fact pattern.
Sorry, where's the IE?
In little B of the fact pattern.
Oh, in B.
You could replace the IE by in the circumstances described in the submission.
Yeah.
Okay, because I was looking at under application of IAS 38... paragraph stating that in this circumstance, because it says paragraph 15 usually has insufficient control, blah, blah, blah. In this circumstance, the entity does not have sufficient control. Just to clarify that, maybe it's the same point, maybe it's just placement of it.
Okay.
I think it's stating the opposite of what's in paragraph 20, which maybe gets to the same point.
At the last meeting, when we were trying to be very clear that it was something specific in the fact pattern that mattered, we tried to do it by being very clear in the tee-up here that it was the case, which I think is consistent with what we're trying to do here. Mm. Right?
Yes. Yeah. Let's have a look. I don't think we can change that paragraph, Bonnie, the one that's straight after application of IAS 38, because at the minute it's just kind of direct quotes of what 38 says. I mean, we can think about it. I'm nervous at the final stage doing anything, but it's almost like if there was anything else to add, it might be in the committee's conclusion.
Maybe. So are you saying take out the IE?
Yeah.
In bullet B, yeah. I was suggesting taking out the IE.
I actually... want to leave that in because I.
and just to confirm, when you say take out the IE, you don't mean take out the whole of the rest of the sentence.
Sorry,
you just mean change IE
scenario.
And I'm sorry, I wasn't very clear. And the reason,
the I and the E.
Yes,
fine.
So it's going to say in little B, it's going to say the training costs are as described in paragraph 15 of IAS 38 intangible assets. It will go on to say the entity has insufficient control over the expected future economic benefits arising from the training
to meet the definition of an intangible asset.
Fine.
Okay.
Yep. Okay.
So right, with
you.
That and with the addition about recoverability of expenses, can I get a show of hands for who supports this agenda decision?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I think everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right.